Welcome to the Product Makers Podcast, where we interview and have open conversations with product makers and leaders from both large enterprises and startups about their experiences in growing successful products, teams, and companies around the world. Today, my guest is John Carter. Now, this is a bit of a special episode because John Carter is a widely respected expert on product development. He's the inventor of Bose's noise-canceling headphones and the designer of Apple's new product process. As a founder of TC Engine Incorporated, he's consulted for some incredible companies, including Abbott, Amazon, Apple, Cisco, HP, IBM, Mozilla, 3M, and many other organizations. He's the author of Innovate Products Faster, a handbook for accelerating product development speed and innovation. He currently serves on the Cirrus Logic boards of directors, and get this, he's got an MS in engineering from MIT. Today in this episode, we dive into a number of topics and we discuss the worrying trend, well, for some in product management, which is focusing on more ICPMs doing the work. We discuss how to approach making strategic decisions, particularly when balancing top-down directives with the innovative ideas that emerge from your team. And John shares his advice and techniques for fostering innovation and productivity. We then wrap up with his thoughts for 2024 predictions in product management and what does he think that we have in store. John is a wealth of knowledge. We only scratched the surface on some of these topics, but I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. So I hope you enjoy the episode. All right, brilliant, John. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It's great to have you. Where are you calling in from?
Menlo Park, California, on the West Coast here.
What's the weather like out there today?
It's very good. Everything is clear and sunny. Little clouds from OpenAI. Good weather. Along with some organizational noise here.
Yeah, actually, we could have done a whole episode on that. Maybe we'll follow up with that one.
It's a whole different talk. Thanks for having me. It's great here.
So today we're going to be talking about product innovation and efficiency, which I think is certainly top of mind for a lot of product makers, organizations at the moment. So we'll dive into that shortly. But what I do with all our guests is to get started, we like to warm the waters a little bit. We do a bit of a quick fire so that listeners get to know you before we get to some of the meatier bits. And some folks, this might be new information for them. So we'll jump into that. Does that sound good?
Let's go.
Awesome. All right. First one, what is your favorite beverage? It can be anything.
Okay, well, I'm somewhat of a grape nut, so I'd have to say it's probably wine, and specifically wine from the Rhone Valley, Syrah and Grenache and so forth from France. That's my favorite beverage of all.
All right, what is your favorite travel destination and why? I think I might know this based on the first answer.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a Francophile, but I would say it's Paris. It has beautiful architecture, amazing design, and it's also where this term, French term flâneur, was created. And flâneur basically means, and it relates to product management. I like Paris because a flâneur is someone who just walks around and observes. And so in a way, it's like doing mindful discovery in a beautiful city and keeping your mind open to the possibilities. I just like that frame of mind. And I think it relates to what we're talking about today.
I like it. Always be curious. All right, next up. What's your favorite product at the moment? Could be anything.
Yeah. I mean, I've got tons of favorite products, but I think the most germane might be Canva. And I compare that to Adobe Illustrator, which is super powerful, but man, is it hard to use. And Canva has just come in and it is amazingly powerful, but the complexity is hidden. And it's just a wonderful tool to get going and get started and turns everyone into at least an okay graphic designer. So I think Canva is a tool I enjoy using and I think is really well-crafted.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for those that don't know, and I'd be quite surprised if they don't know, their story is incredible. I think what they've done in terms of their community and building out the craft and really kind of enabling folks who haven't had a chance to have much design experience like myself to be able to get their hands dirty and do it and create something great is pretty amazing. All right, this is going to be an interesting one for you with your experience. What's one thing you've changed recently in how you approach your work that's made a difference?
Yeah, and this may not be unusual for those that are listening, but I really am using ChatGPT more and more to lean on. it doesn't replace great thinking or experience, but man, is it a good co-pilot, you know? And what I like about it is I use it for all sorts of things, whether it's writing a sales email where you can actually have it iterate on itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then have you interpret it and then it critique your improvements to doing all sorts of really crazy stuff. I even know one woman that's using it to help her with her divorce. So as crazy as that sounds, it's no substitute for experience, but man, is it useful.
Yeah, I agree. I just, we were doing some survey analysis recently and I just imported the CSV file into their new analyze feature that they didn't have previously. Like, I think it saved hours of work.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, you got to go back through it and make sure it makes sense. But I completely agree. What I'm curious about is, has your usage changed? Like, is it daily now versus, say, at the beginning it was quite sporadic? Or how has your behavior with it changed over time? Or are you straight away?
No, that's super, super interesting. So I try and use it daily. And usually do. What has changed is the breadth of problems that I give it. And so it's not I go deeper and deeper into the same thing. It's like I think of more and more different aspects of its utility and apply it in different ways. So I'm always expanding the footprint of how I use it. And I also have some experience where it really is wrong. I've had it help me on some engineering challenges, perform some calculations, and it's numerically incorrect. You have to check it. But I have found that it's useful for more and more things more broadly across all of what I do. Travel, I mean, for trip planning is phenomenal. Yeah. For itineraries, it's crazy good for that. Like, you're going to these three cities, what are the top three sites and how can you line them up in the shortest path? And it'll do it. I
mean, yeah.
And so I just throw all sorts of new junk at it, but I use it daily.
I completely agree. I won't go down this rabbit hole too much, but we're getting married next year and we have a bunch of documents and decisions and everything that we've made. And I've started building an app out of it using the GPT. And just feeding it with all these different use cases and information. And it's amazing. I'm like, right, I need to package this up and try to sell it.
All right, honey, we're done.
Yeah.
I've sorted it all out.
Yeah. All right. I think, yeah, we could probably talk about this one all day with your experience and the impact you've been able to have with the companies you've worked with. But what's your advice to having a successful career?
I think there are two things. And again, this is through the lens of my career, but two things that I found have been useful to many people I've known. And the first is be passionate about what you do, because without passion, you're not going to really have the drive to excel and enjoy the time you're spending it and tooling your craft and sharpening your abilities. So passion is number one. And number two is you got to take risks. And, you know, I'm in the consulting business and every day can be a complete, I can get fired from everything. And you just can't be afraid of taking risks. And I think one of the challenges that people have is they think that you take a risky step or path, it's irreversible. That is such a false choice because not all decisions, in fact, most decisions are reversible. You just can unwind the decision and take a new path. There are some things that are irreversible, but many, many more things in your career are reversible. And I know for me, every time I've switched a job, it's been up and to the right. And so you just can't look back or be held back by fear. So passion and the confidence to take risks are really what's been important to me. What about you? What have you found has been elements of your career that are key?
I don't normally get these turned back at me, but I'll give it a go. I completely agree in not being afraid to take risks. I think anything that I've created that has been really great or more impactful, it's about making a decision, moving quickly with it, even if you don't have all the information, and just giving it a try. And I was listening to this thing the other day where it was like, if you haven't tried an approach 10 times or 10 different ways, then don't give up. And the more you build that habit, you become more resilient to it. It becomes a lot easier. So I think I completely agree with that. And I think to add something different to love what you do, because I completely agree with that. I think there's no compensation for hard work. I think especially with a product, you genuinely have to be one of the hard workers more harder workers to really succeed. Now, I don't mean working crazy hours. I mean just being accountable, turning up for your team, doing the right thing, and being a good person. So I think that hard work kind of translated to a few different areas. But I think hard work rather than smarts probably got to be where I am.
It'll take you a long way. I mean, one of the challenges with product, with leading product or being a product manager is you have all this accountability, but you have no organizational responsibility. You don't control the people on the team. You have to lead by influence, and that is damn hard. Mm-hmm. So you got to know your stuff, and that's hard work. I do agree.
Yeah. 100%. And I think, it's hard to kind of instill that sometimes in folks, but that's where leaders can really lead by example in terms of how they show up, the work they put in, and that environment that they create as well. So yeah, but no, I love that advice that you gave in terms of love what you do and take what risks. All right, segueing into the episode. So we're going to spend a little bit of time here talking about product innovation and efficiency. So we kind of kicked off a little bit with it, with one of our first questions that we spoke about, but I'm really keen to get your thoughts on this, John, especially with your career and what you worked on. Now there's certainly a trend at the moment that we're seeing where product management is starting to focus more on experienced product managers taking over more responsibility. We're starting to see layers being removed organizationally, whether it's senior PMs or group PMs or generally people managers. I'd be really curious to understand, like, A, do you think this is true in terms of this trend? And then B, what do you think is motivating this trend in product management to focus more on experienced product managers?
Yeah, I think, Adam, to a large extent, this extrapolates from our discussion about what are successful elements in your career. And that is really being good and really having passion for what you do and being willing to take risks. So we see in our work with clients, there is a trend towards removing levels in product management. We've worked with some large product management organizations on the size of 50, say, globally. And what we've certainly noticed is the manager and director levels are being taken out. And I think it's a good trend. I don't think it's a bad trend. And you might think, well, if you're in product, that, hey, you're taking out a career ladder step. No, I think the good companies find great people and pay them a lot of money. And you can have great leadership capability and demonstrate your career as you take on bigger scopes in terms of products, maybe from an update to major versioning release or managing the entire suite of products. There's plenty of ways in which you can grow without going another level. And I think the reason that this trend is good is that one of the problems, and this relates to what we were just talking about, how difficult it is to be a product manager. There are a lot of teams that don't have good product managers. And so by taking your directors and managers and actually putting them on teams, you're actually empowering the teams because you're going to trust them more by putting a high capability, experienced product person leading that team. And you're going to make decisions faster. As you say, you know, you got to be able to take risks. Well, experienced people are willing to take those bets and compel management above and the team below or with beside to take those risky paths. So by putting more experienced managers on product managers on teams and taking out a middle management level, you actually improve empowerment of teams for several reasons, but one is greater trust of the product people that are on the teams. And so I think that this trend, although it might appear to be threatening to many product managers, is a good trend. The cream will rise to the top and your scope will increase if you do a good job. Don't worry about that. So I think that's what's motivating it is that people are seeing how much middle management slows things down. And what we found in our change management work in product management, working with large global teams, is that the executives have the common vision. The people on the teams in the trenches absolutely know what to do. And then you've got all these middle managers that are trying to protect their mortgages and they're risk averse. Well, get those people out of the way and have the leaders communicate directly to the teams and trust them, and you'll get great product. So that's, I feel passionately about it, and I know it's a threatening trend, but I think there's actually a silver lining for sure.
What are you recommending to companies that do have quite a large middle management? Is it like, are you advocating for perhaps reallocation of where they go? Is it a matter of like relooking at what team do you have on your bench, perhaps making some changes? Is it training? Like what are some of the recommendations that you would give to a company like that? Or is it simply, you know what, we've actually got to let go of some of these folks we overhired and the strategy wasn't right?
Well, in a way, it does include or can include elements of what you just described. What we find in general is a lot of these organizations that have a lot of levels, they have product owners on teams managing the scrums, and they're not qualified to do it. They're brought in from support, or they're brought in from IT, or they used to be an engineer and they know something technical. But the fact of the matter is that one of the first things that de-leveling does is it causes managers and executives to look at the composition of their high-performance teams and actually find and discover that the people that are on the teams, the product owners, are not fit for purpose. And so those people are then assigned more technical jobs or go back to support. So they're reabsorbed by the organization. And then what the executives do, they look at, well, what are the big bets we're making in product? You know, what's, you bet your company, let's say it's a bold new thing, new to the world, or it's something that really you have a lot of revenue in and you don't want to screw up. You make sure that those are populated with your very best, most experienced middle managers. So you push them to the big, important teams, and then you take some of the people that might be displaced and you have them work on some of the smaller activities. So basically, believe it or not, removing a level doesn't mean letting go of the middle managers, but it means redeploying them to the really important high-stakes programs. And as a consequence, you'll find that some of your teams just don't have the trust and the ability to do product from product owners, and those are reabsorbed into other parts of the organization. And the last thing, Adam, that I think is done and I've seen be very effective is mentoring and coaching. Mm-hmm. So you take some of those senior people and maybe they don't find a spot, but what they can do is they can help individuals, not meddling, not replacing the decision making, but helping them, helping the team members that are working day to day be more successful by providing coaching and mentoring. So those are kind of three things that I see that are beyond just simply cutting out a layer and letting them go. I think they're redeployed.
Yeah, no, I like that. I was going to follow up with what would be your kind of advice or perspective for either aspiring PMs or perhaps folks that were in perhaps more junior roles that were reallocated somewhere else. And I really like that kind of mentoring and coaching. Like I think a trend that I would like to see is we close the door on people wanting to get into product management, and we're not providing the kind of tools or the frameworks to help them level up. But certainly what I am seeing is there's a lot more experienced product managers who aren't able to get roles. And I think perhaps where we are in the market right now, we're starting to see things pick up a little bit. Maybe that will change next year. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if the total population of product people that we have might reduce over time. Or perhaps the role might change a little bit. I'm not sure.
Oh, that's super interesting. So here in Silicon Valley, there have been a lot of reductions in staff, especially from the big tech giants. And what that has produced is a glut of middle managers, but that's in all domains. It's not just product, it's engineering, it's QA, it's, you know, kind of across the board. So I think there's a reabsorption that's going to take place. And this is something really interesting, because some of the people listening to this podcast may be from IT. It turns out that product management as a valued skill is really moving into IT as well as external product development organizations. And so I think that, you know, long term, I think the prospects are very bright, because large IT organizations actually need product managers too, and they're out looking for them. So
that's a super valuable point. I wanted to kind of pull on the thread a little bit more about the changing nature of having more experience product managers or product makers working directly with teams. And I think some of the feedback that we've been seeing in our product makers community here at Product Board is about being able to make these kind of strategic decisions, but trying to balance this not being too top down and directive with the teams, and making sure that they can still innovate and that ideas can still emerge from the team. And I think you touched on it in the first question around having more experienced people is going to actually lead to more empowerment. But I'd love to get your take on, for more experienced folks who are stepping into these roles who might be used to kind of quite top-down directive, how can they balance that and make sure that they are getting these really kind of innovative ideas from their team?
So that's a really, I think, an important question, because innovation comes from everywhere. There's just not an advanced development or a product leader that has all the innovation. But rather, it's really distributed throughout the company. And there are several things that I have found that I think are really important. And first is providing a compass. I think organizations that have a clear North Star, clear product vision, is really, really useful, because it kind of tells you where it's worth innovating. And I think one of the challenges that organizations get into that say they innovate, but then they actually don't, is because they're really not clear about what area they're looking for innovation. All innovations are not equal. And most innovations, frankly, are improvements, small I improvements, not capital I innovation. And so the challenge is, you want to nurture improvement. Of course, improvement's a great idea. But often in product teams, you know, you've got what you think is an innovation, and it could be a big step, but it's also got to be a big step and it's got to be beneficial. You need them both. But by having a clear product vision, you can basically say, we're aligned with the success path of the company, and our ideation here is going to move us along our product vision. So like a compass, it kind of, if you will, allows us to innovate in the areas with the most amount of impact and put all the wood behind one arrow. So I think the first thing is having a clear product vision. The second is, and I think this is where product comes in and really earns their keep, is, does it matter? In other words, we're gonna you know, spend 3-6 sprints on doing this because we all think it's a good idea. Well, at the end of the day, is it going to drive ARR? Is it going to produce greater customer sat, higher net promoter score? Does it really move the needle financially? And one of the things that I always look at is, does this have the potential to move revenue, you know, between 5% and 15%? Because if it doesn't, it's probably not worth, and I'm talking about not of the product, but of the overall organization. So you want to make sure that your innovation can move the needle, as the CFO would call it. So you want to ask, does it matter? And then finally, I think it's really important, and this is where innovation and efficiency get a bad name, but the problem is, when people mention it, it's a false choice. You can have both. The challenge is that people often have innovations or improvements late in a release. And they say, well, we could put it in this release, and therefore it then becomes a trade-off between innovation and efficiency. But if it's really a great idea, it can probably wait in the next release, and you can have a small team start spinning it up so that you can do that in parallel with getting your launch ready for your release ready for launch. So I think if you look at a compass, make sure it matters, and then are judicious about when you apply it, I think you'll find a lot more support for your great ideas, for sure.
And that support coming from, like, the individual team that you're working with, or the broader business?
It's both. You know, I think one of the things, when you have a clear product vision and a compass that guides you, is then you can articulate the value prop to executives, and you can connect the line segment between your innovation and moving the company forward in its strategic direction. And furthermore, because you're a product manager and you've got business acumen, you can describe how it matters financially. So I think that, and this is where experienced product managers have a real edge because they know how to position what they're doing so it resonates with the management. And you've got to realize on product teams, your managers are one of the customers. And I think experienced product managers do that very well.
I completely agree. And I feel like one of the unique kind of experiences that you have is your technical knowledge and some of the products that you've been able to work on and deliver to the market. And what you touched on there was just around the importance of experienced product managers, making sure you have experience in the team. What I'd love to understand, and I think this will resonate well with either developers who want to transition into product management or perhaps product managers that have more of a technical background, I'd love to understand how your technical knowledge and that background has influenced kind of your leadership and your decision-making when you're working with product or product teams. Like, how have you used that to your advantage?
Yeah, I think it's primarily speed, and confidence. So when you've got the technical background, you're able to make decisions quicker because you likely know the cost of implementation much better. And furthermore, you know the likelihood of success. And so you can help the team make better decisions faster by having a technical background. But on the other hand, I know many product leaders, great product managers, who don't have a technical background. In fact, you look at a lot of the great leaders in Silicon Valley, like Jobs, for example, and he would pair himself up with other people. Product managers, if they don't have great technical knowledge, are smart enough to recognize it's important and then find someone who's their trusted lieutenant that can work with them. And so you lose a little bit of speed because you have to get on the phone or sync in a call with someone. But on the other hand, if you've got a trusted partner who knows tech, you know product, the two of you can really make great progress. So you don't have to have a technical background, but I think it's useful because it can shorten decision-making time and increase confidence.
I certainly didn't come from a technical background, but I really feel like that extra time, I can think of a few scenarios where like I agreed to go for a lunch or I was quite thoughtful in terms of how we were prioritizing the quarterly roadmap to make sure that they had a voice, making sure that there was a seat at the table, you know. I feel like now it's probably a lot more balanced than it was a couple of years ago in terms of being able to and have those healthy debates and make sure that you're kind of on the same page. But I completely agree. And I think having that kind of lieutenant that you can work with and share ideas with and bounce things around makes a heck of a big difference to the quality of the outcomes that you're able to deliver.
I think there's one other thing that I think is super important, and this is an underdeveloped skill for most product managers, is listening. Yeah. And I think that, and candor, frankly. So if there's something you picked up that you don't understand, grab an engineer by the collar and say, I don't understand this. Can you explain it to me in simple language? And usually that'll throw an engineer because they don't know how to explain something. So you do that, you've got a break, you've got a pause of silence while they think of the answer. But, you know, frankly, if you can understand the why well enough, then you can come through with enough technical authority to get the job done.
Yeah, definitely. And I think building on that, so our listeners really love like applicable takeaways and a like case study or something that they can kind of take with them. And I'd love to know from your experience, what are some of those techniques that you found most effective for fostering this innovation that we've been talking about and productivity in the teams that you've been working on? So we've touched on a couple of these, but in your experience, are there, I guess, tried and true frameworks or approaches that you go back to make sure that you're fostering that innovation and that productivity?
Yeah, I think one that probably I always go back to, it's a touchstone, is not all great ideas are internal. And I think great product managers are great listeners and they're data collectors and aggregators. You know, you look at a lot of the best innovations in Silicon Valley, and they were sourced by partners who maybe could do a subset of the product, but not the whole product the way you could do it. Or it could be with lead customers who are solving tomorrow's problems, not today's problems. So I think this, you know, and people often say, well, customer centricity, it's obvious, but it's hard to do right. And I think the innovators that really, really succeed are those that don't have a not invented here attitude. They look outside for great ideas. They're open to feedback when you've got a customer that really has a problem with what you do. And so I think that innovating on the outside is really helpful. And another area that's kind of related to that is innovating outside the core. Because if you have your North Star and your true compass, you know what things could move the company forward. Not all those things are pure core product. They can be in support. They can be in usage. They can be in how it connects to the ecosystem. They can be in delivery. They can be in all sorts of different domains. So I think the two things that I would say are to really be open to ideas from the outside. And the second is think beyond the core product about other ways you can delight your customers.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. It's really good advice. I think it's really easy to fall into the trap of just thinking about your own little world that you're focusing on and how do you move that forward, and then not looking outside of that and even thinking about improvements to process or our go-to-market plan or how we talk about the product or how we sell it. So no, I completely agree. We're almost at time, but I really want to pick your brain. So we're coming to the close of 2023. It's been an interesting year. I'm really curious about your perspective and kind of from your vantage point and what you're seeing in terms of some of the trends that you think we may see next year. So either they're going to be enduring or they're new, but yeah, I'd love your take in terms of trends in product management for 2024.
Yeah, you know, obviously there's AI and it's going to have all of its impacts in so many ways, not just in product, but how we work. But I think the trend that I see is picking up and will continue strongly in 24 is how you get insights and information and act upon them. So we just talked about the virtue of looking outside for innovative ideas. Well, I think discovery is one of the areas that I would really say is going to strengthen in its intensity and its creativity of use. And I think there's a couple reasons for it. One is, in a way, kind of a backlog against this fog of data that we can collect. Well, you just have all this stuff available. How do you sort through what's good or what and what's not good? What's meaningful? How do you raise the signal-to-noise ratio? And how do you take customer visits and qualitative kind of customer signals and consolidate those with, let's say, support cases or feature requests? So this notion of being able to look at external and internal ideas, consolidating them, and then looking at how you can improve the signal to noise by plucking out those things that really matter, help drive the customer connectivity and the connection with the customer beyond the obvious that's going to take place with AI and data. Because insight's very different than data, very different. And you need to be able to get some perspective from the fog of the data in order to make the kind of right decisions. And so I think you're going to see better tooling in discovery and bigger use of discovery as we go forward. Obviously, AR and VR is going to help that trend. So I'm really excited to see what's going to take place in the way the nexus of innovation and satisfying customers to create customer-centric solutions that really work is how we can leverage discovery.
Completely agree. I like what you touched on there about VR and AR. But what do you think we're going to be doing more? How do you think we would use that technology in discovery, like zooming into people's offices and talking with them?
Exactly. So one of the things that discovery is often called is contextual inquiry. And the environment in which the use is actually applied is super important, because without the context, you really don't know what you're solving for. Yeah. And so it's incredibly helpful in terms of your discovery. And, you know, now with Zoom and so much we can do with video conference, it's made us a step closer, but AR and VR will give the richness that just a video, flat video screen can't do. So I think that, it's going to be very, very useful for context.
Yeah, I completely agree. So my first product role, I was working on a real estate agent website, and my manager sent me to work in the real estate agent office for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And you get to see their coffee they have in the morning, the first thing they look at on their screen, everything, every little detail. And that, to me, that just taught me about the actual customer journey and what they go through and their pain points. And I completely agree. Like, you miss that just zooming in for 30 minutes, going through a structured list of questions. Like, you need to contextualize it. You need to make sure you're documenting it properly, but you need to have your finger on the pulse. You need to be completely immersed in it. So yeah, interesting space to watch. Love it. Awesome. Thanks for sharing your insight on that.
You bet. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome, John. Well, here, look, we're finished now. I've got one final question, short one. And this specifically is for our product makers community who are very interested. It's, how can listeners help you? Is there anything they can help you with?
Certainly they can reach out and tell me what challenges they're facing. I'm always interested in kind of what's front of forehead at any given moment with what's out there. And so understanding what's really on the top of mind for questions or challenges is super interesting to me. It helps me get sharper, and it also helps me think about remedies to help them out. So if they've got any concerns or questions or let's say barriers that they see, I'd love to hear about them.
Right. And what's the best way? LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn is great. You can come to my website, tcgen.com, and leave a comment. Either way is just fine.
Awesome. I'll try and get you signed up to Slack. I'll talk to you about that later on.
Okay. Sounds great.
Well, Hugh John, thank you so much for joining this episode today. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you and hearing your insight on this, and especially with your experience and the companies you're working for. I think, yeah, our listeners are going to get a ton of value from this. So thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, look forward to speaking with you soon.
You bet. It's a passion. I appreciate it, Adam. Take care.